Welcome to the Dreamcatcher Podcast, a place where you'll receive a boost of inspiration, practical advice, and tools to maximize your success and personal happiness. And that's not all. You'll also get plenty of guidance on how you can use your gifts, talents, and compassion to contribute towards making the world a better place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a preview of what's in store and to also receive a free ebook. To sign up, simply visit www.thedreamcatch.com. Now it's my pleasure to introduce you to the host of the Dreamcatcher podcast, Celine Chinoy.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to a Dreamcatcher interview podcast special. Music is truly a gift from nature that adds beauty, richness, and color to our life. But did you know that music also has healing properties that can alleviate common emotional and physical issues? Bill Prodsman, my guest today, was happy to tell us more about music's healing properties and so much more. Bill's fascination with the near-medicinal effects of music has caused him to study the topic widely and stay engaged with the most recent research. He has over 20 years of experience teaching people how to use music in everyday situations to improve work performance, strengthen communication, and improve their wellness. Bill's work was recognized by the National Council for Behavioral Health Care for Artistic Expression in 2014. Join me for this heartwarming conversation where we discuss about various aspects of music and how we can use music as a tool to manage our emotional states. Hi, Bill. How are you doing today?
Hey, Celine. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for making the time to speak with us about the power of music and how we can use it to improve various areas of our life. I look forward to I look forward to learning more about this topic from our conversation today.
Cool. Happy to teach.
Perfect. So let's get started by speaking a little bit about your background. In your bio, you mentioned that you started piano lessons when you were 3 years old. And as you continue playing and performing, you realize that the discipline of playing the piano was also a behavioral healthcare practice. So could you please tell us more about this journey of realization that you had?
Of course. You have to know that my mom was a piano teacher. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have started piano at three. She has had her degree in pre-primary education and teaching credential and all of that. And she was a piano player. So I was her experiment. Turned out so well that she had a piano studio. Much later in life, she was teaching all kinds of kids, very young kids. So she had a gift for this, and I benefited from that. The thing about playing the piano, like most things, is that you get better with practice. Mm-hmm. And even average talent can get better with practice. So it's not so much about talent as it is about the discipline and just showing up and being there, at the piano, however long it is a day, you will improve. So I wasn't like on the leading edge of that. It took me until college to do my 10,000 hours. But I got them in, and it's been, musically a fun journey. But on the healthcare side, this is really interesting. I had no idea of what was going on until I was in maybe my mid-30s.
Okay.
And that's when I started therapy. And I started to realize that what was going on in therapy was something that I'd been doing at the piano for a long time. And that is living deeply with the emotion that you bring to the piano is similar in some ways to living deeply to the emotion you bring to life. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. That's interesting.
So I had from a young age, when I became aware of this, 7, 8 years old, you start to realize that there's feeling in music. And I became aware of the fact that to be effective, I had to convey that feeling so that an audience could get it, they could understand what it was that was happening. Anybody can play the notes. Computer can play the notes. But the subtlety of the emotion in the music, especially with classical music, all playing the same thing, right? So to be able to find some emotion in that is the real discipline. And with practice, you can do that. So I realized that this practice that I was learning in therapy about how to connect with and express my feelings in words was one that I've been doing in music for a long, long time, more than 20 years by that time, with conscious awareness. So it was sort of connecting the dots. Oh, I do this at the piano. Oh, I could do that like in real life. I'm not at the keyboard. I could do that in real life and also effectively communicate your anger or sadness or joy. And that realization sort of sparked my curiosity in how it works, but also in learning how to be a better practitioner, to have a better, more reliable practice away from the keyboard with the same kind of intent that I do at the keyboard, which is to be an honest, authentic, courageous as possible, but also that authenticity allows me to be, openly fearful, openly angry, but without a destructive component. And that's really important here. There's no destructive component at the piano. You're just playing music. But if you're raging outside of your medium and you don't have a practice to help you channel that rage, things get broken and people can get hurt. And I had to learn how to do those big emotions in real life in a way that was productive and useful, similar to what I've been practicing all my life at the piano. Does that get really close to the answer you're looking for there?
Yeah, that makes sense. So what you're saying, you're essentially saying that you were able to channel all your emotions through music and kind of it healed you in the process. I mean, is that fair to say?
It absolutely, of course. There are some practices that I've learned about throughout the course of my life where one goes honestly into emotions in a big way, but usually in silence. Usually in a place of safety. And the object there is to experience them and sort of let them wash over you and wash through you instead of hanging on to them. And I had learned way too early how to hang on to them instead of letting them go. It was easy at the piano, but everything else in life was sort of bottled up inside me. So I had to unpack. I'm still unpacking all of that, right? So I can get closer to what the authentic feeling and trigger related to it might be and allow that to happen and run through me. And then I'm ready for the next thing instead of just hanging on to all the stuff and letting anger build up. And you know how we do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think music is such a great way to kind of express those bottled up emotions. Usually, it's a very healthy way because there are dysfunctional ways of doing that. People have addictions. They have, I don't know, all kinds of... So I think using music to kind of express those emotions is brilliant. That's the way to go. And I mean, this leads me to the next question, which is, you believe that music has medicine-like effects and it can actually alleviate symptoms of certain conditions like Alzheimer's, substance abuse, and stress. So I'm curious to know about what actually happens in our body when we listen to music that leads to this healing process that we're discussing.
Oh my gosh, what an incredible question. I wish I had an answer for you, but the latest research that they're doing is more about interpreting what happens in our brains when a music stimulus is applied. It's sort of the other way around. So instead of looking at why it is that music helps Alzheimer's patients, for example, reconnect to something deeper in themselves, they're taking people who are musicians and putting them into a functional MRI machine and trying to understand what the brain is doing when music stimulates it. I think that's where the research is going to go, and we'll eventually get to something that lets us say, now we understand. But right now, the best science out there is sort of an educated guess. And I can tell you a little bit about how that works, because some of it everybody agrees on. But the research is so exciting and moving so fast that it's hard to say with certainty, this is what's happening. We've all seen that movie where they go into a home for folks who have Alzheimer's and dementia and make music for them, right, with recordings. And how people who are, almost completely non-responsive suddenly light up, start singing, relate to their caregivers or family in a more, a much more present way than their Alzheimer's or dementia effect. And that is so incredible because it shows that there's something inside, right? That we have this internal connection to music that's part of who we are, just part of who the what the human system is. And, you know, you can talk about brain science and brain chemistry and neurotransmitters and hormones and things that get triggered when we hear sound. And that's probably related in some way, Celine, but, you know, even if I were a PhD researcher right now, I think I'd have to answer your question and by saying, we don't know yet, but we're getting there. And there's some very interesting things happening. What we do know is that, what's a song that you love? Pick a piece of music that you like. We'll just talk about it that way. How's that?
Okay, great.
Favorite song?
The first one that comes to mind is Crazy by Seal. It's pretty old school. It was...
It's awesome. Okay, perfect. This is great. This is awesome. Okay, so if anybody's listening and doesn't know this, like go to Spotify or somewhere, wherever your favorite music is, and pull up Crazy by Seal. So here's the question for you. So when you listen to Crazy by Seal, what do you feel when you're hearing it?
I just get into a different mind space. It's just the whole, the beats, Seal's voice, the lyrics, and it's just so beautiful for me. It's so moving, and it's connected to a personal memory of mine as well, which makes it even more potent. So I just love that song. Every time I hear it, it triggers something deep within me, and that's why I love it.
So when you hear it, it sort of brings you to a more authentic experience of your own self.
Yeah, you can say that.
That's, I'm boiling it down just for ease of use here.
Yeah.
But clearly there's a lot of things that go into that. So there's nostalgia. You have a memory that you connect with it that's good for you. There's a sense of peace, a sense of connection, like things become more real while you're listening to the song. And all of those things are simply because of sound waves that hit your ears, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
It's totally crazy, but that's how it works.
Yeah.
And they know something about, you know, how those sound waves work. They can trigger any one of, well, I like to say five different responses. You've probably heard of them. They call them the famous five Fs. So it's fight, flight, freeze, feed, or mate. This is a family show. Okay. So the famous five Fs.
Yeah.
And those responses are really basic to human survival. So back in the day, you know, where we had tigers to deal with and we had to try to kill elephants to have something to eat, those kind of responses were really, really basic. And what we know, at least the scientists know for sure, is that sound can trigger any one of those five things.
Mm-hmm.
And we organize sound into music, and oftentimes, like you might relate to Crazy by Seal, the same way that I relate to Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. Two different pieces of music, just arbitrary here. Mm-hmm. But when I'm playing Moonlight Sonata, I have the same kind of feeling and response that you described when you're listening to Crazy by Seal. And isn't that wild, right?
Yeah, I know.
Two different, totally different kinds of music, but it produces the same sort of response in you and in me. So the part that's interesting to science is, you know, why does Celine feel that when she's listening to one song, and Bill feels that same kind of connection when he listens to something completely different? But what's going on with that? So we can explain the mechanism, and we can say that the amygdala triggers all this stuff, and that the, you know,
yeah, I was going to ask,
the neocortex is involved.
Yeah.
You know, that's all cool.
What I read.
But you know, there's more. What's the more, right? What is it that's really in there about this sound that does these things for us? And I mean, it's probably history. There's so many components to it. And it's a beautiful and probably unique to every one of the, how many of us, 7 billion of us now on the earth, we probably all have a slightly different response. It's fascinating that way. But the medical, if you will, effects of music. So there's a guy out in Massachusetts, out your way. He's at Mass General Hospital Dr. Claudius Conrad is a surgeon and a piano player. He's a classical pianist. And when he played recordings of Mozart for his patients in the ICU, he was able to measure some surprising effects. Now, maybe they aren't surprising to you or me, or probably not to him, but just listening to classical music, to Mozart, doesn't matter, but it happened to be Mozart, he found that his patients needed half of their pain meds. They reduced their pain meds by 50%. Celine, that's huge.
That is. Wow.
They showed a couple of drop, like a 20% drop in a couple of stressors, stress hormones that they can measure. But the really crazy thing is that there's a hormone that helps with healing. It's called pituitary growth hormone. And just by listening to this music, that hormone went way up. So their healing improved. They healed quicker just listening to music. Now, there's probably science on this, but what actually connects the release of those hormones and the need for fewer pain meds and all of that, science is still working on it. But that's music as medicine right there. And it's amazing to me to know that that's possible.
I know. Right? Music is instinctive to us. Like even back in the day, like I believe, you know, when we were in the caveman days, they had their own like tribal rituals where they had their own form of music. You know, I don't know what instruments they use. Maybe they use drums or something. But you can trace it to our early origins. And it seems like we're designed to love music. And it kind of triggers all these these deep emotions, love, nostalgia, as you mentioned, connection, sadness. And do you think that there is a purpose behind this that we are so... I mean, I don't know. I'm curious to know if we really are designed to love music for a reason.
Well, sound is the sort of primal response, as those Alzheimer's people demonstrate. When nothing else is working, you can get through with sound. And so, yes, I do. I think it's very basic to who we are. We have a heartbeat, you know, and that drum beat is very important. And if you measure the heart rate of people who are listening to a particular kind of music, it will sort of all entrain to the beat of the music. And I know we've all experienced that. If you've been out on the dance floor, you've been trained to the beat, right?
That's right.
It's just how that works. We do that totally naturally, most of us. I mean, there are some people who are amusical and don't respond at all, but we do that. And then the sound of our human voice, that's so incredible. Before we could make words, we sang. We just sort of hollered back in the day, 10,000 years ago. But that sound was how we communicated, right? We were able to, you know, yell across long distances and let people know what was going on. Or we were able to make whatever the primitive language might have been sounds to those in our tribe or around us to let them know how we were doing, how we were feeling. I think we've always been able to do things like cry, for example. That's a very beautiful way to connect with sadness. And by not allowing it out, I think we make a big mistake sometimes in the stiff upper lip world of saying, you know, big boys don't cry. Well, yes, they do. It's part of who we are to be able to do that well. And same with, you know, screaming in fear. You go to a horror film and everybody jumps or screams. These are really basic to who we are. So, yes, I really believe sound is, we're resonators. Everything about this entire universe vibrates. And sound is basically just air vibrating. And the ability to make those sounds is a talent that we appreciate here in the modern world. But back in the day, it was just a given. This is how we communicate. This is how we, summon the gods by drumming, by beating on logs or whatever it was. That sound was our primal connection to the other stuff, to the stuff that's bigger than us, right?
Yeah.
Which has always also been a fascination with us. So I have great respect for what happens very rarely anymore in the modern world. But if you're able to go to hear a cantor sing in a synagogue, for example, or listen to the shofar, or if you can find a Latin mass and experience that, or find a recording of any of these things. This is really, really ancient music. And it's not just related to the monotheistic world. It happens in the the drum stuff that takes place in the Polynesian archipelago and in Africa and in the native cultures in North and South America. It's just sort of part of all of our culture as far back as we have records for it. And sort of being a steward of that in this modern day is, it's a huge responsibility in a way, you know, Selena, you have to do it well if you're really serious about it.
You know, something just crossed my mind as you were talking about, you know, the synagogue and things like that. Music is used to kind of put you into a spiritual state of mind as well. I know I've had experiences in concerts where I have reached this higher level of consciousness. Just being in that space, singing along with the artist who's performing, kind of being in, with other music lovers. I have definitely had those spiritual experiences. So, I mean, it definitely can take you up there if.
It's meant to, right? It's so totally meant to. Way back in the day, I heard a recording of, I think they would call them Tuvan throat singers, but these are singers who can make two or three pitches happen at the same time. It's called Hearing Solar Winds, and it was a seminal recording that got played on maybe Fresh Air. It was something I heard it on NPR, right, way back in the day. And I was so moved by this because I couldn't stay awake. I would put this music on and I would just go into this blissful sort of not waking dream, but not completely asleep either. And no music had done that for me before that time. And now that happens to me, like if I'm getting a massage or sometimes at the chiropractor, there are other places, acupuncture, where I get that sort of partly asleep, partly awake feeling. People who meditate well, and I don't, but I try. People who meditate well say that that's the meditative state, the Zen state or something. And when I learned that that was possible, I flipped. It was incredible, you know? And like you, I've experienced that in church, at concerts, just playing the same notes that Paul McCartney wrote, right? And probably has played thousands of times. You feel them under your fingers and you're going, this is what Paul does. You know, it's like an overwhelming honor to be following in their footsteps that way.
Right. And we touched on this briefly earlier. You know, there are countless genres of music out there. So why does one genre of music appeal to certain individuals while sounding awful to others? How does everyone develop their own unique taste of music? Because, you know, I, my parents, the music that they listen to, I just cannot, like, I just do not understand.
Yeah. Right.
I don't understand the appeal. I really have tried, but, you know, they come from a different generation. It's more culture specific. So I'm just curious, how do we develop that individual taste in music?
Golly, I've got a real bias on this because I love lots of different kinds of music, even music that, you know, my wife can't listen to the same piece of music that I'm listening to without just cringing. And I'm in this other world, you know, listening to, you know, something wild. I don't know how that happens, but I think the sociologists would say that it is cultural in a certain sense. It's clearly generational because there are people who are very like set in the 80s. So if you talk to like most millennials, they'll give you a slice of music that's sort of theirs, that they feel like they own that music and that's how they grew up and whatever.
Yep. That would be me.
And yeah, exactly. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's just totally cool.
Yeah. Because my niece would call that old school. Now my niece, she's a teenager. When she listens to, I listen to her, she's like, oh my God, aunt, that is like old school. I'm just like, oh my goodness.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. But on the flip side, you know, you've got, my oldest stepdaughter is 17 and my youngest is 13 and they love to listen to K-pop.
Right. My niece too.
Korean pop, right?
Yes.
it, like the thing, anime, all of that. So I'm like, okay, this is cool. Is there substance to that music? It doesn't really matter if you analyze it. The thing is that that's what lights them up. And that's great. That is amazing. If you're lit up by music, that's a whole lot better than just not having any music of any kind. And I don't know why so much that happens, because like I said, I'm an outlier. I love it all, including old stuff. I mean, when I was 11, 12, I was playing ragtime, right? What was up with that? There was a classical piano player playing ragtime. I don't know. It just lit me up. So I played it. And there are certain things that I'm just in awe of people who can play. Like, how does anybody play bebop? Or you watch some folks over the keyboard, they're just like, amazing. How do they get around like that? You know, it just blows me away. And sometimes their music connects with me, and sometimes I have to work harder at it. And by working harder at it, that means I bring sort of like my musical appreciation skills into connection with the piece and really try to understand what's going on there. But the primary response I think that you have is the most key. You know, you, me, anybody. So if we can identify a feeling about the music and we can choose to say, okay, that's my anger music. Now, whenever I need like some good anger music, I'm going to put on hip hop. Pick your favorite artist, right? Mm-hmm. There's a message in there and there's an angst in there, and it just really helps me to feel that anger really deeply. That's what I will choose hip hop for. There are times where I want to listen to something more peaceful and I'll put on, you know, I don't know, something that'll put me to sleep, just because that's what I need. So I'm all about whatever it is that works for you. You know, the thing that I want to see, if I've got like a desire for this, would be to say, okay, so Celine, you like Crazy by Seal, and that fits, you know, this set of the spectrum, all emotions that you might feel, it fits over here. What about the rest of the emotional spectrum? What's the music that, for you, that fits into those places? Like, where do you go for anger? Where do you go for fear? It's important, I feel, to have music that fits in each one of those sort of primary emotion response areas, because they're so basic to who we are as humans. And we want to have a way of connecting with anger that doesn't break things and hurt people. So for me, the music that I need for anger to support me in that angry feeling until it washes through is hip hop. It might be different for somebody else. You know, they might go to death metal, or, you know, pick anything, whatever is good for you. I know people that get angry over classical music. It's a great anger trigger for them. And that's perfect, right? Because they know it. Mm-hmm. So yeah. If they need anger, you know, pop on the Wagner or whatever that they use. It's just so completely individual and so wonderful to be able to have that knowledge and to know what works for you, right? Without saying, well, no, Bill, you're wrong. Moonlight Sonata isn't something that sounds at all like Seal, so you can't possibly feel the same way as Celine does about it. You know, that I think is misinformed.
Yeah, it's personal and it's subjective, so you really shouldn't
talk about
others.
It's about having that healthy diet, right?
Yeah.
Like all hip hop all the time, probably not so good. Where do you go for, you know, if you want some tenderness in your life?
Right. Yeah, I know. I think there's this website where, like, I think it's called Mood Music or something, where you can actually create, they have playlists based on the emotion
that
you feel. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah, I have. Spotify has got a thing like that now too. I think Amazon Music does. I don't know if Songza is still around, but Songza got started for that reason. So somebody could say, oh, you know, it's happy hour. What music do I put on for happy hour?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very useful. Lots of people need some help, you know, when they start to think about it more consciously. Oh, gosh, you know, I'm really feeling sad right now. My best friend has cancer, who's going into the hospital for treatment, and I just don't know what to do, but I want to feel this, you know. Could I go out there and find, you know, what's the best music to use for cancer? Well, probably, you know, you could find it somewhere, but it's going to be individual. So it sort of starts you on this quest. Looking for the right music is a lot of fun. It takes some time, but it's a very satisfying practice, because when you hear the right song, it just gets you. Like,
yeah, I know.
Like you were talking
about. It hits the spot, doesn't it? Just, you hear the perfect song, perfect time. Yeah. I know that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's golden. Write that song down and remember it because you're going to need it again and it's there for you.
Right. Right. And I think, you know, this is a great segue to the next question. I mean, do you have any quick tips on how we can use music in our daily life to improve our work life, our relationships, and our health?
Sure. This isn't, you know, rocket science. And there's lots of people out there who get this on a very basic level. So my occupation is teaching people the answer to that question. And there's so many ways in. We've talked about a couple of them on this call. I think the very first, most obvious one is to identify the feeling that you connect with in music. So if you're in a place where you're just like feeling scattered or whatever, in that place, what I like to do is cycle through a few pieces of music and see if one of them picks me up and carries me. If it doesn't, I'll keep looking. But to form little playlists that are my go-to sort of crash kit, if I need to be sad, I've got a playlist for sadness, songs that really help me feel that sadness deeply. Same thing for anger and fear. And of course, for joy, I've got a joy playlist too. Three or four songs is all it takes. So I encourage people how to identify the music that works for them. And it's usually music they already love, but the most powerful kind. Science has helped us understand that obvious point. But it's true. The music you love is your most powerful music. So finding songs from the music you love that support those four primary emotions is so key for me to beginning to do some work with music. And that works in business or whatever, because guess what else we do? Our brains remember music, like those Alzheimer's patients. Play a song and they remember it. They actually remember it. That's so deep inside us. So a three or four song playlist, I don't know, maybe you got Crazy by Seal, you've got, I don't know, two other songs. All you have to do to have the same, and this is cool, all you have to do to have the same physiological response to that music is to remember it. Hear it playing in your head, those annoying little earworms that get in there and won't stop.
Yeah,
exactly. So that's what our brains do that. All we have to do is dial in on those songs that are good for us at that Seal moment, right? When we're feeling that. And all of those same physiological responses happen. Is that not cool?
So
you don't even have to hear it. You don't have to hear it. If you remember it, it's going to trigger you. You know the music to Charge, right? They play that baseball game. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody goes, Charge. Right. Okay. So all you have to do is remind somebody of that music, and right away they're at the baseball game screaming, Charge. And the body responds with all the right sort of triggers, hormones, endorphins, whatever, all that stuff, brain chemistry, right? The body remembers how to do that, and bang, it's there for you. This is what athletes do. You know, they're getting ready for the game. They're getting psyched up for the game, right?
Right.
Well, what they're actually doing is that. They're dialing in to their physiological preparation for what's going to happen.
Right. There's also music.
That's powerful stuff.
For like for studying, right? I mean, I've seen YouTube, there are some, when I'm writing stuff for my blog, I sometimes listen to like classical music to kind of get me into that state, that creative state of mind.
So you're right. We can trigger our brains to a higher sort of, I'll call it a left brain state where we're thinking more carefully than we're feeling.
Right.
But it's also interesting to me because, well, you and I might go into that intellectual place on classical music. I have a buddy who's schizophrenic. And the only thing that gets him to slow down is layering music on top of itself so that there's this just overwhelming noise. I've listened to it. It's crazy. But this is what slows this dude down, right? That's the thing that he has to do to turn himself down enough to be able to focus on an intellectual task.
Okay.
So isn't that cool, right?
Yeah.
Classical music, he's like, that does nothing for me, Bill. But stacking up a bunch of beats for him is what it takes to slow him down.
Interesting. So let's say we should like engage in trial and error and just kind of see what works for us.
There you go. And you know what? It's not so much of a trial, because listening to music is kind of fun.
It is.
But you do have to explore yourself. Like, this is built into us, right? You have to sort of unpack all of the cultural influences that might be there and explore why those things have kept you from listening to some songs that might be useful for you. And then explore new songs that are out there. I find K-pop fascinating, but I wouldn't have gotten into it unless my kids did. So now I'm not an aficionado or anything, but I have a better appreciation, right, of what it does. And there are probably times where I can dial up some K-pop that I need for one or another situation. Who knows what it's going to be? But I've got that tool in the bag now, right? And I just encourage everybody to go out there and do that. And this won't hurt you. This won't hurt you. I can give you an example of that if you've got time for a short story.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so I'll be very honest with you. So part of the reason that I was in therapy was that I was chronically depressed.
Okay.
And there's a lot of reasons for that. I've dealt with it all my life. I'm really good at worry. I learned how to worry very early in life. I have lots of practice, right? And so I've had to unpack that. There are times where the depression gets really bad and I feel suicidal. And the work that I've done in talking about this, I realize that that's a commonality. Many of us get to that place. And while we don't like to admit it, I will. And the suicidal feeling is something that scared me the first time it happened years ago. But the second time, where it was really present, where I was an empty nester, I didn't have a relationship, you know, the cat had died, it was bad. Mm-hmm. Everything, all the wheels had come off, right? Divorce, bankrupt, the whole thing. It was really bad. And at that time, which was in 2007, I'd been doing a lot of work with music and this kind of practice for a long time, more than 15 years by that time. And I decided to take my own medicine and see what would happen. I said, you know, there's always tomorrow. If I'm still feeling this bad tomorrow, I'll deal with it then. But for right now, I'm going to listen to some music. And the practice that I chose is one we mentioned at the beginning of our conversation this morning. I chose a piece of music that supported me in this feeling of utter despair. And I put it on repeat and I put on the headphones and sat in a safe chair. And I just sat there and let this music play. I let it play and I let it play and I let it play. The objective was to feel fully sad, fully depressed, let all the despair come out. And I probably cried. I don't know how long I was there, but when I woke up, it was still playing and I was still in the chair and I was tired. So I went to bed and the next day woke up because there were words in my head, words that wouldn't go away. And I wrote them down because I'm a writer like you. And I wrote them down and I realized as I was writing that I was writing lyrics. I was writing the words to a song. And before long, they were all done. It was like five verses and the bridge and everything else. I'm like, wow, this is cool. So now where's the music going to come from? Mm-hmm. And then I started to hear this music in my head. So I got out the piano and the computer and I started scoring the song and put in all the words. And by noon of that day, after I was going to kill myself, I had this whole song done. And then, of course, the obvious question was, well, who's going to sing this? Nobody will ever perform this. And the little boy said, Bill, you're going to.
Wow.
Well, I don't sing. I don't sing at all. But I performed that sucker a couple of times in front of real live audiences and shared a little bit of the story. But I think what happened here, and this is the important point of this story, I think what happened was that by allowing myself the grace, the time, the being willing to feel all of that as fully as I could, it flowed through me and left me in a place that was full of inspiration and creativity.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, it just opened up this portal where through which you could channel all that inspiration.
Exactly. And I didn't ask for it. I mean, we know that, you know, a lot of creative people have what the modern world likes to call mental illness and what, you know, creative people call creative drive or inspiration or deep emotion that we build on.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it unlocked that. I didn't know what was going to happen to me. I became very aware that next morning that I wanted to keep breathing, and I have. Suicidal feelings haven't gone away, but I know about how to deal with them now. They've become more of a a friend and an ally than a scary thing that I can't go there. And the practice is so important. So I know what to do now when those feelings come up. And for the most part, I give myself the time and space and the music to let the feelings play with me and move on, move along. I can't be sad forever.
Yeah.
If I let it go.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. So music literally saved your life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I'm a believer, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can relate to that. When I went through a tough breakup, I really used music to get rid of all the sadness. You know, it was a process. Of course, it didn't happen overnight, but music was definitely instrumental in helping me heal from the pain that I experienced. So yeah, I can relate to that on some level.
Good. Yes. That's where I work. That's the point where this really matters, is helping people to be okay with those big, deep, scary emotions.
Yeah.
Because they're so much a part of who we are, right? They've been that way since there were human beings.
Yeah. It's interesting because I remember hearing, I don't know if you've heard of Pema Chodron. She's a Buddhist. She talks about that. She's like, you know, instead of dismissing the negative emotions, you should get into them. Like, you should feel them on a deeper level. And, you know, that's exactly what you're saying.
I discovered that teaching, you know, not long after I realized what was going on with the music. And I've been not a devotee, but I've done a lot of reading in Buddhist tradition. And some of the people who are out there writing about it today are just marvelous. A guy named Michael Singer.
Yep, I heard of
him. Wrote a book, couple of books.
Yes.
The Surrender Experiment. Oh my gosh. He chose to just allow his life to be what it was.
Yeah.
And had the most amazing life. I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't read the book, but you've got to find and read this book. Surrender Experiment. You can't put it down. The Surrender Experiment by Michael Singer is such a powerful book. And of course he's written others, but that notion of acceptance and of allowing, that's kind of what this practice of listening to music deeply is. It's you allow the music to give you space to accept what you're feeling without judgment in it.
Wow, I love that. Bill, that was so beautiful. Thank you for sharing your story. And I'm sure someone out there is definitely going to be able to take solace from it.
I hope so. Yeah.
Thanks for sharing your knowledge with us today. I'm sure that a lot of people out there will be updating their playlists after listening to this podcast.
Good. Yes. Let it go.
Yeah. Also, before you go, could you please let everyone know how they can find you on the web and what you offer?
Of course. So I have a complicated name, but I've solved that problem by having a couple websites that are easy to remember. Musiccare.net, MUSICCARE.net. Great place to go to learn about how music works on us. And as you can probably guess, and as we kind of alluded to, this is bigger than music. So I made a website called PracticalHeartSkills.com. Practical Heart Skills is all about everything else that we can do to practice in addition to music. And there are lots of cool things about that. You can see them at the website too. Both of them will get you a correct spelling for my name. And if you want to follow or Google me that way, I'm happy to do so. So I do coach in this area, and I would be happy to work with anyone who'd like to reach out to me. My history of that is working with veterans with post-traumatic stress, homeless people in recovery, or veterans in recovery as well. There's so much that needs to be done in the world to relieve trauma and distress and sadness. And I'm so pleased to be a part of that work and just happy to coach or support anyone who wants to do it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Bill. And, you know, we need more light workers like you to help heal the world. That's what it's all about.
You're so welcome, Celine. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. You have a wonderful day.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed what you just heard, please subscribe to my podcast and feel free to share it with your friends and family. Take care and speak soon.